Let's go, let's go, let's go. Tempo in and out of the huddle. I want to go odd. 5-51 mirror.
This is Patriots Playbook.
Go stack guts combat. Odd. 51 mirror.
Patriots Playbook. Breaking down last Sunday's game.
They're looking for man coverage in the zone. They didn't have anybody to throw to. Just stay outside on the 7 route.
Next Sunday's game.
Be ready for the greats check, too, okay? Because we'll get the punch on 3rd and short. Even 51 greats. Even 51 greats.
And the rest of the NFL season.
Yeah, go ahead and hit it in there because the backers are going to fast read over the top.
And some of the fun stuff in between. Now, here's John Rook on Patriots Playbook.
Come on, let's go, let's go.
Welcome inside the playbook for a Wednesday, everyone. I'm John Rook, and we're going to get right back into it here in just a couple of moments. By the way, that may have been the single best part of PFW in Progress I've heard in years, with those guys going back and forth at the tail end of the show. So kudos to those guys and their impassioned arguments about the game. You may or may not agree with what they had to say about what they perhaps expect the outcome of this Sunday's game to be, but nevertheless, passions are running rampant here. And by the way, whether you agree or disagree with them, we can continue that thought process on where you think this game could hinge. What will be the difference maker this Sunday is what I'm going to ask you right off the top of the program today. Who will be the difference maker? What will be the difference maker in Patriots Ravens Part 2? First round of the AFC playoffs this Sunday at Gillette. Web radio at patriots.com. 508-543-7482 is the telephone number. A couple of guests coming up on the program. Trent Dilfer, who is NFL analyst for ESPN, is going to join us. And Jerry Sandusky is the play-by-play voice of the Baltimore Ravens. He'll join us in hour number two. In fact, the aforementioned Trent Dilfer joins us now inside the playbook. Trent, it's John Rook. Very, very nice to speak to you today.
John, it's a pleasure.
Thank you very much for the time. Hey, number one, the one thing I wanted to jump into off the top is the fact that Tom Brady today was named NFL Comeback Player of the Year. Having played the quarterback, having been the Super Bowl, having, you know, had success in your own career in the NFL, can you kind of surmise for our listeners and our Patriots fans or followers here maybe just a little what it's taken Tom Brady to come back from what he's done with his knee injury, all the different things that he's had to go through to get back to even close to where he was 2 years ago?
I always have a hard time ever trying to relate my experiences to Tom Brady's because he's so much better than I ever was. But I think on this issue I can a little bit when it comes to injury.
Sure.
I really admire him, first of all. I to come off a catastrophic injury, and you talk catastrophic, you're talking, you know, the blown knees, the Achilles tendon tears, which I had, neck injuries, those types of injuries. You're dealing with more than just the physical component. I mean, the physical component's difficult in itself, and the countless hours that it takes to rehab those, the resilience, the pain threshold. I mean, that's all amazing in itself, but the mental part of it I find the most challenging because your body, as a professional athlete, somebody does as well as Tom Brady does, throwing a football and playing within the pocket. You know, your body's programmed to just respond to the mind, and you just trust that it's going to. Well, when you suffer that type of injury, well, now all that doubt creeps in is my body going to respond the same way it has in the past? And you have to go through a lot of challenge, overcome a lot of challenges to ever get to where you can trust it again. And I was never from the school of thought in the beginning of the year. I heard some people that I admire and that I respect as analysts say that Tom has fundamental flaws, he wasn't willing to step into his throws. I didn't buy any of that. I studied Tom very closely at the beginning of the year, watched every snap throughout the year. I really think he overcame those demons rather quickly. I thought it looked like Tom Brady from the get-go. I didn't think the offense looked like the offense everybody expected. Mm-hmm. But I thought Tom Brady was at his normal, efficient self from the get-go. And I say all that to just say I think it's remarkable what he's been able to overcome. And it's really a testament to his mental fortitude, his resilience, his toughness. And because of that, I kind of put his season in that context, and I think he's played much better than a lot of others think he has.
Okay, I think that's a fair assessment. Let me take that a little bit further, because earlier in the season, he was airmailing some balls. He was not on target as he is now. Is it fair to say that he might have been trying to put a little bit more mustard on the fastball simply because he was unsure of how stable his knee might have been?
You know, here's the problem I have with that. So
okay.
We had this discussion at ESPN. early in the year. In fact, I did a piece for Countdown about how Tom Brady is the same old self early in the year when everybody says he wasn't. And my argument was this. What we now digest as the viewer for NFL football is highlights that ESPN shows mainly, but the other networks as well, but you get a big, heavy dose of highlights. Well, highlights are just that, they're highlights. So our lasting impression of Tom Brady in 2007 was the highlight reel, and it was amazing. Absolutely remarkable, and it seemed like he never missed a throw. But I went back and watched the coach's tape from 2007. You know what? Tom Brady airmailed deep balls, and he missed guys, threw some in the dirt, and he missed open receivers. But we don't remember any of that because what we remember is what we saw in the highlights, and that's him hitting Randy for 20-something touchdowns and eating up the middle of field to West and hitting Gaffney and Watson, and it seemed like every throw was perfect and every play was successful. But that's not the reality. The reality is he missed throws in 07, the same way Brett Favre missed throws this year, Drew Brees missed throws, Peyton Manning missed throws, Dan Marino missed throws, John Elway missed throws. They all missed throws, okay? Well, this year everybody's looking. Tom Brady different? Is he going to be less accurate? Is he got? And you know what we started showing? The highlights now became Tom Brady missing long throws and Tom Brady missing underneath throws, and that's what we saw. But when I compared the two videos from 07 and then early this year from the coach's tape, it was very similar. Now, there might have been a couple, and I can think of a couple deep balls to Randy that he missed this year that, you know, he probably should have had or that he turned down. Would he have hit those in 07? I think when you're hot, you hit them all. You know, it seems like he hit them all. The point I'm making, I know I'm being very long-winded here, is that look at it completely objectively and you just go play-by-play 07 to this year, there was not a big difference, but our perception was that there was a big difference.
That's a fair assessment. It's an interesting take, quite frankly. I think it's one that has not yet really been offered. I think we've had some fans try to tell us that. You know, our Patriots Football Weekly writers here, who do the program before this one on our little radio empire here, our editor is a staunch defender of this team, certainly a staunch defender of Tom Brady in particular, as you might expect him to be. But there is a pretty good balance, I think, in terms of the weighing the positive versus the negative. Let's put it that way. I don't think anybody here is a terrific Patriots apologist, but he has been steadfast in his opinion that Tom Brady is fine, that Tom Brady has always been fine, and that it has been our perception, just as you suggested, that has caused all this big question mark to hover over Tom Brady's head. And so I'm sure Fred Kirsch would be very, very happy to hear you say what you've just said about Tom.
Well, Fred's a smart guy. No, I think, and I understand it. Listen, I'm not criticizing people. I get it. You know, there's only a few of us sit there like I'm doing it right now as we're talking. I'm in the film room, and it's hard to sit in there and clear your mind and say, listen, I'm not going to get caught up in the perception. I'm not going to look at the stat sheet. I'm not going to listen to what people are saying on radio and TV. I'm going to find it out for myself.
Right.
And you sit there and you go clip after clip, tape after tape, and there's just not a big difference in Tom Brady's performance. Now, the offense is drastically different, and I've gone on record many times not trying to kill the offense coordinator there now. I know he's a heck of a ball coach. But they had something really special when Josh McDaniel was the OC and what they did offensively and the creativity and the multiplicity, what they did offensively. And that is not there anymore. And that is really the main reason you haven't seen the productivity from the New England Patriots offense this year that you saw in 2007. But I think that will change, too. That will evolve with time. But I think it's much less on Tom Brady coming off an injury. Is he less accurate? Is he forcing the issue? Is he turning throws down? I mean, you could make a case for that off isolated plays, but you take the whole body of work into account and you look at it closely from the coach's film, and there is not much difference between 07 and this year.
You know, it's interesting also, again, Trent Dilfer, former NFL quarterback, now an NFL analyst for ESPN, joining us here in the playbook. It's interesting that you say the creativity is a problem, because that is something that personally I have been and a couple of others have been banging on all year long, is that while I think we can respect that there has to be some sort of a learning curve for a first-year play caller, which basically what Bill O'Brien is for the Patriots. The one thing that we didn't realize until he was already gone was that Josh McDaniels was a creative, for lack of a better phrase here, Trent, wunderkind. He really knew how to call the right little thing at the right little time. Obviously, it didn't stand very well for him in the stretch run here for Denver this last year, but for the Patriots, with the personnel he had here, he didn't mind taking the chances because he knew he had guys that were talented enough that if the play fell short, they'd still make chicken salad out of chicken feathers.
That's a great way to say it. I've heard it said otherwise, but I like the way he just said it. I believe, and this is coming from not, you know, my opinion is based on being around, you know, some great coaches, the Mike Holmgrens and Brian Billick in his day and really good Tony Dungy and some of the people I've been around. And I've studied other play callers and studied other coaches, and I study this game in depth. And I form this opinion that maybe the most underrated aspect of offensive football might be in the top three of most important parts of offensive football is play calling. Mm-hmm. It is paramount. It is so important, but it's so hard to judge it because you don't know all the inner workings of what goes into calling a play, and so much of it is feel, so much is intuition. And Josh McDaniels was brilliant at it. He still is. I mean, the Denver Broncos won 8 games now. How many people would have thought they would have won 8 games? So they just had something very special. It's what you see in New Orleans with Sean Payton and Drew Brees. Mm-hmm. There's synergy between the play caller and the quarterback. And when you have that, you can be highly explosive offensively. When you don't have it, it makes it much harder. I'm not saying it's impossible. It just makes it much harder. And you lose your multiplicity, you lose your dynamic ability offensively because you're not setting plays up with plays and you're not necessarily dialing up the perfect play at the perfect time, and it puts a much greater burden on the quarterback. And I see it throughout the league all the times. When you see these quarterbacks are just flat hot, I mean, they're on fire, and you can't explain why. A lot of it you trace back to play calling, and when you start talking to the quarterbacks, as I do on a weekly basis, mm-hmm. they always will be quick to mention, hey, they dialed up good ones for me. My play call dialed up good ones. Wow, we had them on the ropes. You know, the quarterback will always tell you it was a product of the plays that were being called for me.
Interesting. How much harder did the play caller's job get this week for New England without Wes Welker in the lineup?
Yeah, I think the big challenge there, you know, Julian Edelman's going to do a nice job. I think Merrill Hodge did a really nice job this week on ESPN kind of showing the strength of Edelman and how he has a very similar skill set to Wes Welker. You don't replace Wes Welker, but you can find a way to kind of replace his productivity. And I mean, Edelman caught 10 balls last week, so they're going to be able to get him the ball, and he's a good young player. I really think the key is as the field tightens up and those throwing lanes get condensed, Can Tom and Julian trust each other for those tight window throws? And I think the big issue is going to be the Baltimore Ravens bring kind of slot pressures, those overload blitzes that make you throw the ball hot. You know, Wes and Tom just were on the same page. In fact, they turned hot throws into big plays. Mm-hmm. And what scares me is it just takes one little mistake on timing or trust between Tom and Edelman, and it can turn into a quick six for the Baltimore Ravens defense. That, to me, is really the biggest issue, is in the pressure situations, the blitz situations, is there that trust that Tom can throw the ball before Julian does what he's supposed to do, and that timing and rhythm is there to beat the blitz? Because if Tom's having to wait or kind of see what he's going to do, well, now you open up a bag of bad stuff that can happen to you.
Well, here's another key, I think, that people perhaps will start remembering as we get a little bit closer to kickoff on Sunday, is the fact that if there is any doubt whatsoever, I think an integral part of the Patriots' success, if they have any at Sunday at all, will be utilizing Kevin Faulk, perhaps, as a secondary hot read out of the backfield.
I think that's a great point, one that I actually hadn't thought of yet. I think Kevin Faulk has to be a big part of their pass game this week, and you can take advantage of Baltimore's defense with the back. If you can get the back matched up against Suggs or Ray Lewis, some of those linebackers, you can get big plays, and if you can catch them in blitzes where they're vacating the void where the back can be, there's a lot of yak available to you yard after catch. So that's a great point, when I would hammer home the rest of this week anticipating, looking forward to the game, because that could be a key thing. The other thing, too, is the Patriots have gone back to their old roots, and that's balance, and they're going to get some two tight end packages and hammer the rock, and that sets up some nice play action opportunities. You look at the touchdown to, was it Baker last week?
Yep.
Was it Baker, yeah, I mean, that's a two tight end package. That's a condensed formation. You can get those vertical opportunities if you start in some of those more run-oriented formations and personnel groupings. So I know the Patriots, hey, the Patriots have the smartest coaching staff in football. I'll be the first to say, now, I don't like some of their decisions this year, but overall they're as smart as anybody. And they're going to find ways to what I call steal offense, and that's so important in the playoffs. The teams that you see steal offense with big plays, meaning you set things up with formations, personnel groupings, play action, kind of trickeration, getting the defense to think one thing and have to react to another, they know that's a big element of playoff football, and I think they're going to be able to expose some matchups doing that.
Trent, how much of a factor is the previous game played by these two teams back in week four? Has so much changed where they may not pay much attention? I mean, they'll look at it for schemes and play tendencies maybe and some things like that, but how much is it a factor now?
I think it's big in the passing game, especially from the Patriots' standpoint. You know, I was always a big believer that, and this is why I think I had some playoff success, that you'd go back, and most teams in the playoffs will go back 6, 7, 8 weeks and do 7, 8 game breakdowns. Mm-hmm. But if you're willing to go and do full season breakdowns and just invest the time and go back and watch all 16 of your opponent and watch maybe an earlier matchup, if you just get one thing out of the pass game, hey, when we come out in this personnel grouping, in this situation, they are 75% this. You know, this is how they attack it. Well, if you know those types of odds going into a play or a critical situation in the game, you have a distinct advantage over your opponent. And I think that's been part of the Patriots' genius over these years in the playoffs, is they're willing to put in the work. They're willing to go back and exhaust every single clip of film to find anything that can be to their advantage. And I think they'll do that. I think they'll go back to that game and say, you know, we had success, and we scored, I think they scored, what, 30? Oh, correct. They got
it was 27-21.
27. Okay, so they got to 27. They're going to say, listen, you know, we left some points out there, and we know that they're going to do this. This is a great opportunity for us to put a 30 spot up on them, and we can do it quickly because we know how they're going to react to some of the things we do offensively. I do think it matters.
Okay. The way that the Patriots have been kind of soft and then they've been stingy, almost all at the same time defensively. I mean, yardage-wise, they've done at least a representative job of being somewhat stingy. Certainly, they're amongst the leaders in the top 10 teams in yards allowed and also points allowed this year, and yet there's a perception that the Patriots' defense has a hard time putting pressure on the opposing quarterback, largely just based on the number of sacks. The number of sacks, probably not as large a number as certainly a lot of fans would like to have, maybe even the players themselves. How much of a factor is it going to be for the Patriots to put pressure on a quarterback when it seems like Baltimore might be content, first of all, to let Ray Rice just sort of attack the soft underside of the belly, especially the Patriots have a less than healthy, say, Vince Wilfork or Ty Warren in the lineup?
I think this is very simple. I think playoff defense is very simple.
Okay.
I've learned this from some great defensive coaches. These aren't my thoughts. These are not my original thoughts. These are coming from great defensive coaches. You don't mind giving up yards in the playoffs in the middle of the football field, whether it's run or pass. Okay, you can't mortgage the house to stop them on first and 10 from their own 35. Mm-hmm. Okay, or try to create a pass rush in a pass situation early in the middle of the football field. What you're trying to do is make the other team earn everything they get. So that starts first and foremost with not giving up any big plays, chunk yardage. You want to limit how many times they can play action and get 25 to 40 on you in that game. You want to limit the big run. Ray Rice going for 6 on first down doesn't cost you the game. Going for 60 can. Okay, so that's a starting point with defensive football, is make them earn everything. Don't give them anything cheap. Tackle well. Be cap sound. You know, make sure you get the runner down. Make sure you don't give up the big play. Then it becomes very simple. It's situational football. Get off the field on third down. I don't care if every time the Ravens get the ball on their own 20, if they get to the other 38. You know what I mean? They just can't get deeper than that. Give them all the yards they want, but on that third and four from the 38, you got to stop them. If they do happen to get in the red zone, you make them kick field goals. So make them earn it, get off the field on third down, and make them kick field goals. That is playoff defense. And I think the Patriots, especially this first week, can do that. And I do think they have some issues on defense, But they're good enough, and they're well coached enough that I think they understand that if those young players can embrace that mentality, then, you know, you end up with a 14-6 game after two quarters because they kick field goals or they had to punt to you. But they might have more yards than you, but you have more points than them. So I think that's the formula that the Patriots have to use and most of these teams in the playoff have to use. Make them earn it. Get off the field on third down. If they happen to get in the red zone, make them kick field goals.
Trent, if you're John Harbaugh, how do you look at the Patriots? And how big of an opportunity is this for you? Do you feel like from a Baltimore perspective, this is a good matchup?
I think in their minds they think it's a good matchup. You know, every coach goes in these games thinking, oh, we have the advantage, we can do this, we're gonna execute that, we have a matchup here and there. You know, to me, the Baltimore Ravens is all about how they play the game. I think they have one chance to win this game, and that's if they kind of break the mold a little bit early in the game. They have to come out, make the Patriots think they're running the football, coming downhill at them, and they have to take some shots. They have to generate some free offense early in the game, big plays, vertical threats. They got to put some air in the defense so that if they do hit on some of those plays early, then they can run the ball consistently throughout the game. And that only works also if defensively you can stop them. I mean, you got, as the Baltimore Ravens, you got to take some chances and blitz Tom Brady and make him get the ball out now to Edelman and not wait and let him dissect the defense, be comfortable in the pocket. You got to take some chances. Like I said, you have to blitz from Edelman's side. You have to put pressure on Tom now. It can't be token pressure. It has to be immediate pressure. To do that, get them off rhythm, make them start doubting what they're doing offensively. If they can't do those things offensively and defensively, I really see the Patriots running away with this one.
No kidding. So you kind of led perfectly right into my next question then. All things being equal, even with Wes Welker out this week, do you like the Patriots to advance?
I do, and I judge all these games, I have to say this in context again, with both teams playing a clean game. I can't predict turnovers. Okay,
right.
I can't predict
right.
tip balls, you know, whatever it is. And you can't predict special teams breakdowns. So if both teams play clean games, meaning there's not a lot of stuff you can't predict, I just think the Patriots, this is a great matchup for them. I think this is a 10-point victory, that type of game. Now, like with any game in football, if the weird stuff starts happening, you know, who knows? This thing could go any direction.
Well, you know as well as anybody, I think, that playoff football, as you're talking about some of the limitations defensively and what you should think, you know, game plan-wise, playoff football basically boils down to two things. Mistakes. Not only in penalties, but turnovers.
Yeah, and I think what that does is what you try to do is you try to minimize your opponent's ability to beat you by not beating yourself. You trust that the who you are as a team, as an organization, as a staff, is good enough as long as you don't give them freebies. And, I mean, I use this formula when I won the Super Bowl. Mm-hmm. I mean, the great offensive teams has used it in the past. Basically, you say, listen, we're not going to beat ourselves. We're going to make them beat us. They're going to have to earn everything. So we're going to minimize their ability to beat us by not beating ourselves. It's pretty simple, but you have to do all that within the framework of staying aggressive and staying who you are and still executing your schemes at a high level. I mean, it's easier said than done, but there really is a formula to this.
Sure. Trent, I sure appreciate the time. I'd be remiss, though. There was one story in the NFL today that certainly has been of a breaking news nature, and that Mike Shanahan is back in the league as head coach of the Washington Redskins. And I'd love to get just a couple of your thoughts on how Shanahan has stayed involved, apparently, in football, not only through visiting teams, but looking at a lot of game film, staying up on everybody, and now is getting ready to take over the helm in Washington. Do you think Washington finally made a smart decision?
I really do. I talked to Mike a few times about this. He really has stayed up on it. I mean, we talked about a month ago for about an hour just about football in general, and he's very well versed on the trends of the NFL. And he's stepped back and taken a new, fresh look at the game, and I think his perspective is healthy right now. He's one of those unique, you know, the genius word is, we throw it around too much, but he really is an offensive genius. And he has a unique perspective on how to turn things around, maximize the potential of each player on his team, identify what they do well, and make sure they're put in a position to do it. I see him turning this thing around immediately in Washington from an offensive standpoint and as a team standpoint to where they're a playoff contender. The interesting thing's going to be to see what they do at the quarterback position. I think they have a great opportunity where they can pay Jason Campbell enough to keep him there, and he can be the starter that gets into the playoffs while they draft somebody or find somebody who will eventually be the quarterback they take to the Super Bowl. They have a nice opportunity to buy that young quarterback time, whoever it is. To me, it's Colt McCoy. It's Jake Locker. It's one of those guys down
Sam
the road.
Bradford?
Maybe. You know, I'm not the biggest fan there, but I think he could be under Shanahan. Just develop a guy for a year and a half, 2 years, while Jason Campbell does a nice job, but really have a nice window of opportunity to develop your franchise guy for down the road.
Well, you mentioned Colt McCoy. What do you think about the national championship game tomorrow night?
I'm excited. You know, I that's my passion, studying these college quarterbacks. So I've been in the film room for the last 6 weeks studying these college quarterbacks. I really like Colt McCoy one day as an NFL player. I don't think he's pro-ready right now, but he's going to be a great player in the league. He's a great college football player. Nobody's given Texas a chance. But if that quarterback gets hot, if they allow him to run the show and spread Alabama out, I think Texas really has a chance here because of him. And I think it's going to be fascinating to watch because everybody's expecting for Texas to be shut down on offense because some of the bigger, more athletic defenses have done it. I think you give a quarterback this much time to prepare against a good team, he's going to show it. He's going to bring his A game, and I think Colt McCoy will do that.
I'm very appreciative of that comment since I'm a Texas ex, so.
Hook them horns, right?
Yeah, there you go. Trent Dilfer again, who's, of course, obviously a Super Bowl champion, a quarterback in the National Football League, and now an NFL analyst for ESPN, joining us here in the Playbook. Great to visit with you. Thanks so much for the knowledge and continued success on television.
I appreciate it. Thanks for giving me the opportunity.
You got it. Our pleasure. Trent Dilfer again here in the Playbook with us today. That's a great way to start the program, isn't it? Outstanding. Great stuff right off the top. And some interesting comments. Fred Kirsch, of course, will be very, very happy the knowledge that Trent kind of had his back in terms of some of the things where Tom Brady's concerned and the Patriots' potential success this weekend.
Oh, he's going to love it when
I'm concerned.
Fred's going to love it tomorrow when I play. Fred's a smart guy.
Yeah. I was about to say, that's the first thing, Jason, that's the first thing that I thought of when I heard him say that was, uh-oh, there's a drop that we can use.
That might make tomorrow's great moments inside the Playbook.
I think it's fantastic. Fred's a smart man. Fred's a smart guy. Love it. All right, so here's the thought process again, in case you're just joining us or you logged on at the tail end of the program. Trent Dilfer joining us right off the top of the show. You can obviously, if you missed any or all of a part of it, just wait until the show is completed, and then you can download the podcast and or you can listen to it on the replay here on Patriots.com a little bit later on this afternoon, but it's definitely must-listen stuff. Coming up in hour number two of the show, Jerry Sandusky, who's the radio voice of the Baltimore Ravens, he actually joined us earlier this year when the Patriots played the Ravens in Foxborough back on October the 4th. He is going to join us again in the Playbook in hour number two. In the meantime, it's you and it's me. It's webradio at patriots.com. 508-543-7482 is the telephone number. And our question off the top of the program today is a simple one, but who or what do you think will be the difference maker for Sunday? It could be a Patriots player. It could be a trend. It could be offense. It could be defense. It could be somebody from Baltimore. This is a wide-open question, so it allows you to be a little creative here. It allows you to give your thoughts and your opinions on where you think these two teams stack up together now and who or what can be the difference maker on Sunday deciding who moves on in the postseason and who heads for the golf course. Webradio at patriots.com. Who or what will be the difference maker for you on Sunday? All right, we're going to get a timeout in here, and then we're going to take some emails. We've got some other news and notes to pass along as we're in the Playbook.
So, Pat, what time does our flight get in?
It says here American Airlines Flight 505 gets in at 7:05.
Perfect. Game starts at 7:30. I suppose you know our gate number, too?
Yep. It says so right here on my phone, Brian.
Yeah, you think you know everything because you have one of those smartphones.
What's wrong? You're jealous because I can check AA.com, get flight info, gates and times, pretty much anything flight-related?
I like to keep it simple. You know, that's how I roll. I'm old school. So I travel with one of these.
Brian, that's a cordless phone.
Right. No cord.
From your home.
That's right.
How's that working out for you?
To be honest, the range is somewhat limited. But only when I travel.
Find all the flight info you need for the big game or the big meeting at aa.com/mobile. We know why you fly. We're American Airlines.
Hey, Brian, it's Dad. I heard you won Patriot season tickets for life. Maybe we could grab a game together.
Who's this again?
It's Dad.
What kind of joke is this? You're not my dad.
No, I'm pretty sure I'm your dad.
Yeah, third one today. Okay, Dad, tell me, when's my birthday?
Oh, come on, Bri. You won Patriot season tickets for life. And you want to talk about your birthday?
I'm hanging up.
Don't hang up on your father.
Oh, yeah. They'll be coming out of the woodwork once they find out you won season tickets for life on the New England Patriots instant game. You could also win $1 million instantly, plus a boatload of other great prizes.
I could do one of those quick adoptions. We could go to the game together and talk about the old days.
We don't have old days.
Good point.
Bye, Daddy.
Pick up the new Patriots instant game from the Mass State Lottery, masslottery.com.
Man, it's football season. Usually the house is decked out by now. You know, the football lamps and the big wall posters.
Dude, it is decked out. But this year, I'm working on a higher level.
Yeah, I'm not seeing it.
Well, you're just not on that level. I've got Razor Sharp Fios TV from Verizon, so I don't just watch the game, I feel like I'm in it. The whole place has ultra-quick Fios internet, so my computer becomes my own personal press box.
Right, so, no little football helmet soaps in the bathroom this year?
Sadly, no. But with ESPN MVP, I get stats, scores, and highlights sent straight to my wireless phone.
With Verizon's Fios TV and internet, plus wireless apps like ESPN MVP, you have everything you need to take your football experience to the next level. Verizon, official telecommunications provider of the New England Patriots. Select VCast phone and VPAC subscription required. Fios available in select areas.
You are so far beyond football-shaped serving trays.
John Rook with the Inside Patriots Playbook for a Wednesday here on Patriots.com Radio. Again, our thanks to Trent Dilfer, former NFL quarterback. Obviously, he wrapped up his career with the Baltimore Ravens and now an analyst on the National Football League. And as you heard him say, also studies college quarterbacks for ESPN. Joining us in the opening hour, and again, Jerry Sandusky, the play-by-play voice of the Baltimore Ravens, will join us in hour number two, so you want to stay tuned for that. Our questions of the day, again, very, very simple. Who or what do you feel like will be a difference maker on either side of the football for this Sunday? Webradio at patriots.com is how you reach us. I did want to share with you, though, an email that came in early, even before we got on the air today, specifically for me, and I guess from the tone of the email, maybe somebody had an issue with me during yesterday's show. If you missed the program, I normally on Tuesdays, you know, we do Nitpick Tuesdays, and you know, I just didn't see the point, to be quite honest with you, only because Sunday's game against Houston meant nothing in the overall scheme of things. The only thing that came out of Sunday's game was the fact that the Patriots lost Wes Welker for maybe the next calendar year, which obviously is a huge blow, and it overshadows really any score that might have been up on the scoreboard. I turned around the program from Nitpick Tuesday to a positive Tuesday, trying to look at positive things and getting your thoughts, positive reasons why the Patriots, you know, not only would win, but then would advance in the NFL playoffs coming up starting this Sunday.
And all this negativity that's in this town sucks.
Thank you, Rick Pitino, who, by the way, is in Providence tonight to play the Friars. And so I just wanted to share this with you and see maybe, you know, as I read it here, if I can kind of decipher what his overall meaning might be. It comes from Rich, who says, John, you've done a good job this season. That's partly why it was so surprising to hear you, with the emphasis on the word you, after this team wins its division, third in the conference, wins a trip to the playoffs. That's the best they can do, isn't it? So surprised about a reader's optimism. You said, wow, that was optimistic, thinking we can win. Maybe we should have an optimistic Tuesday or something. He says, my question is, if not for that reader's email, what would it have taken for you, acting of your own capacity, to have decided to be optimistic without any help? You know, it really didn't boil down, Rich, to the email. I mean, Oh, by the way, he finishes up by saying, you can save your pick for Thursday or till next week if you're more comfortable. There is only one correct selection, so take your time. It won't change. And then he signs in, humble listener. Well, first of all, if you've listened to this show at all over the course of the season, other than on Nitpick Tuesdays, you know, we're overly optimistic sometimes, which is why it's the whole point why Nitpick Tuesday began. Because one of the things you have to understand is I realize that most Patriots fans tune in to this radio programming simply because they expect to be given a dose of Patriots, for lack of a better phrase here, propaganda. Okay? I can understand why people would think that, because we're hired by the Patriots to do these programs. Myself, the PFW guys, it's part of their job description. You know, I've worked for this franchise for 17 years now. Long time. In fact, I've got longevity on everybody in that locker room with the exception of Dante Scarnecchia.
Going back to the 40s with Paul.
Yeah, well, almost go back that far. So, you know, I've been around, and certainly I guess I could be accused of being a Patriots fan as much as anybody, and yet from getting some of the emails like this one from Rich here, you'd think that, you know, I have committed a mortal sin by looking at the other side of the road. All I'm trying to do here is balance this out. And in the interest of balance and fair play and presenting to you both sides of a story, that's really how Nitpick Tuesday grew into an entity unto itself here inside the Patriots Playbook program. It started, we probably started it, what, about 4 or 5 years ago, got specific with it, calling it Nitpick Tuesday.
Yeah, I think that. Sounds about right.
I mean, it's exactly. We basically dissected and analyzed what happened on Sunday after the whole Patriots Monday stuff was over, and I felt like 48 hours after a game had been completed, which is when our program airs for the first time during the week, about 48 hours is a good time to give the game some air, give it some space, give it some perspective to where you weren't using your emotions to fire off and say, oh, that guy sucks, or oh, that play was awful, or that coaching decision was terrible, we ought to fire him. You know, no. That's all heated, emotional stuff. And so that's why, number one, we kind of let, you know, the EI guys take care of that on Mondays. It's all worked out very well here, and I hope that you guys all realize that that's part of the reason how Patriots.com radio started 10 years ago. With, you know, the fact that we knew that there was an audience for what it is that we're providing, that Patriots fans were going to want to have some place to turn to get Patriots information and opinion. And so, lest we be confused for Patriots flax, if you will, we're trying to give you educated opinion. Sure, you know, it's going to seem like a lot of it is going to favor the Patriots because we're around the team all the time. But all of us, every one of us that's on the air on this program, that's all for the PFW guys and myself. We're all journalists first. It's all we've ever done in our lives. We've all been journalists. We've all been reporters. So we also understand what it's like to bring to you fair play and, as I suggested earlier, both sides of the story. Our job here is to give you, I think, both sides of the story, to take a stand, to where you can have, you know, good, open, and honest debate like the PFW guys did at the tail end of their last hour here today, which was great stuff. Absolutely must listen to radio. So you'll want to download it. If you missed it today, you'll want to download the podcast and listen because it's good stuff. But at the same time, educated opinion. Take a stand, pick a side, and then defend it. And that's what basically sports talk radio is all about. And so not all the time are we going to tout the home team here, because then I think we'd be disingenuous. We could say, oh, yeah, Patriots will win. Well, okay, based on what? Would you believe us any more or less if that's all we did? Is that really what you want in a radio host? You want somebody to just toe the company line and say, Patriots win, Patriots win, Patriots win?
I never said that.
Yeah, you as a fan and as a connoisseur, as an observer of professional football, you know better, number one. You expect better, and you should expect better from people that you listen to. Now, maybe, you know, maybe what we have to tell you, you don't agree with. That's fine. That's exactly what this venue is for. If you don't agree with something I say, you need to be moved enough to write it. Type it out on your keyboard as you're listening to me on your computer now. Type it out on the keyboard. It's very easy to do. Webradio@patriots.com. We're very accessible here. And I have to admit, you know, this is the ninth year for this particular show. The first year that Patriots.com Radio debuted, it was just the PFW guys, and then we brought this program in year two to provide a little bit of a different perspective and also do some whole, you know, around the NFL type stuff. You know, some of the fun in between, as you know, announcer boy says off the top of the program here, and that's fine. But you know, you need to see both sides of the story, and we're going to take a stand because that's really what having an opinion is all about. I may or may not agree with what you have to tell me, but that doesn't make you right or wrong. I encourage all opinions, no matter how silly they might be. Strippers. I encourage all opinions. That's fine. It's great. That, you know, we can always agree to disagree, and we can do it civilly. But one thing you're not going to get from me is you're not going to get somebody who's just going to toe the company line. And that's basically what I'm being paid for to do here. The Patriots have enough confidence in our ability, and I say our, the PFW guys and myself, they have enough confidence in our ability to be able to present both sides and to let you make up your mind what you think the right story should be or what the right opinion should be, or if not, then at the very least you have an avenue to voice your displeasure or your disagreement or your agreement. That makes for, you know, must-listen radio. It makes for entertainment. It makes for information. It makes for you having a bit of an edge over your fellow fan because you're coming straight to the source, the Patriots, to get your information. Now, there's so much information that's out there, as we all know, with the Internet. I mean, obviously, we wouldn't be here if it weren't for the Internet. But there's so much stuff out there, and I'm sure you do your fair share of, you know, searching the net. And sometimes, maybe if you're like me, your schedule gets so busy, you really don't have the time to search for some of it, and so you come to the one spot where you think you're going to get the info that you want or need before the game, or you want to hear why something happened the way it did, and so you choose to come here. And for that, we're very grateful and we're very appreciative, and we'll try not to let you down in terms of your trust. You trust us to bring you that. That's our job, to bring you that kind of information as best as we possibly can. But, to expect me to be optimistic, even if I'm not, well, then I'd be lying to you, and I'd be lying to myself, and that's something that I'm just not going to do. The idea here is for you to get the truth, or at least get both sides of the story, and then for you to decide what the truth is in any particular argument, in any particular matchup or occasion. So yesterday, in terms of the program, to get back to the original question here and Rich's email, and Rich, I'm really appreciative of the email because you, when I read it first thing today, when I logged in, I'm like, dang, that's really good. that's really good, because now you've given me a chance to opine a little bit here and explain some of these things to you, why I think, and maybe why some of the other guys, without speaking for them directly, why they think and act and say some of the things that they do. I thought that we were entirely negative, which is why I wanted to be the optimist yesterday and have the positive Tuesday rather than the, you know, nitpick Tuesday yesterday. We can choose to do that at any time. You can choose to do that at any time, be positive. That's perfectly fine. I just felt like we were doing a little bit too much banging, and so I wanted to make sure that we changed course. That's all. Again, it's an effort to try to be as equal as possible, and sometimes I know it doesn't seem like that works out all the time, but it's just a conscious effort on my part to try to balance it as best as we can. So, you know, to answer your question, humble listener Rich, I haven't really made a selection yet in terms of who I think will win. I know it seems like I feel like Baltimore will win, especially the way that I jumped in with Eric and Andy against Fred. You know, Fred, I'm sure, felt like he was being ganged up on a little bit at the end of PFW, which is fine. I mean, you know, we're all big boys. We can all take it. We've all got thick skins here. We have to be in this business. But that's not necessarily the case. I don't feel solid about the Patriots' chances. That doesn't mean I don't think that they will win. You know, Trent Dilfer just told us he thinks the Patriots can win by around 10 points. I think that's overly optimistic. But, you know, I'm going to give him his credit where it might be due, because he's done a lot of the film watching. He's done a lot of the study. He obviously is a former Ravens quarterback, not that it really has any bearing on this game, but, you know, he might have some inside knowledge as to the workings of the organization. And until he's proven wrong, hey, he knows as much football as the next guy. That's why we, you know, wanted to have him on the program. So I'm going to hold off on my selection until tomorrow's show. And I'm not copping out here. That's Thursdays are normally when we do predictions. So I'm going to offer mine up tomorrow. I will tell you that right now I'm torn. I'm absolutely torn. I've gone back and forth at least two or three times on either side. Now, I'm not being a wimp. I've gone back and forth. I really have. Frankly, I was leaning toward, Baltimore, and it probably sounded like it. And then after listening to Trent, he's given me pause, and I'm going to go back and look at a couple of things, and I'm going to go back and read a couple of things later today, and hopefully I'll come up with a little bit more of an educated opinion and or decision for this Sunday, and I'll share that with you tomorrow. You also have a chance now to consider what else we might say on this program and what will be said tomorrow, and then you'll get your chance tomorrow to fire off your scores and your predictions. But today I wanted you basically to look at this game on paper and tell me where you think the difference maker might come from. Is it an individual? Is it a unit? Is it a philosophy? Is it a scheme? Is it a coach? Is it fate? You know, what is it? You know, if you want to be overly optimistic because that's your nature, by all means, fire away. It's all fair game here. You don't have to be optimistic. You don't have to be negative to be heard on this program. All you have to do is to be a Patriots fan to be heard on this program and take a minute, fire off the email, or pick up the phone and call and give us your opinion because that's what makes the show work. Webradio at patriots.com, 508-543-7482. That's how you get us in the program. Rich, thank you for that email because it got me off to a good start today. At least I think it did anyway. It kind of got my juices flowing. So he gets full credit for some of the thought process today. All right, this one, let me share another one here for you. Murray, who writes us from Halifax, Nova Scotia, says, John, I'm trying to learn more about how the Patriots offense works, and I'm looking over some of their old playbooks from earlier in the decade. Murray, how'd you get these things, number one? And number two, you're not like, you know, pawning them off for sale to Baltimore or anything, are you? Says, in them, when they list the positions for some of the wide receivers to take on the field, they mention something called the split rule. And I was wondering if you know what a split rule is when it comes to the Patriots and if you can explain it to us who aren't as well versed. Honestly, that's the first time I've heard that term. That's the first time I've heard that term. I'd like to know if this is actually a real playbook, and if it is a real playbook, where you might have procured it from. I mean, if you feel like it's going to get somebody in trouble, well, then, okay, that's fine. And I can understand you wanting to be anonymous where that's concerned. But, you know, I need to know where it came from to understand, is this a real, honest-to-goodness playbook that, you know, maybe a previous coaching staff had? Because I can surmise that split rule, just based on my somewhat limited knowledge here, could mean a couple of things. It could mean, difference between tackles. It could be talking about spacing. It could be talking about, wide receivers on the line of scrimmage. It could actually be talking about, I think, several different things. So I'd want to know under the context from which you obtained that term that might help me understand what it means or where it's coming from. Not a cop-out, but in and of itself, I'm not entirely certain what that might mean. So that's why I'm searching for the context. So, Murray, if you're listening and you can share, I won't share it if you don't want me to with the listeners, but I would like to know under the context of where you received this said playbook, and then maybe I can try to answer your question a little bit more thoroughly. Okay. Let's get one more in before we break. This one comes from James, our friend in Roanoke Rapids, North Carolina. By the way, James, where have you been? James has been a regular contributor to this show for years. And it seems like we haven't talked about James and anything that he's had to offer for weeks now. Anyway, good to hear from you, James. He says, I feel the Patriots are better off going into this weekend's playoff game than most think they are, even given the loss of Welker. Uh-oh, I smell a Fred Kirsch here. They're getting some key defensive players back from injuries. We think, James, we think. We don't know yet. We think that Will Fork and or Warren will be coming back. And he says, and Brady sure looked like his ribs really hurt him when he jumped up and banged bodies with Brian Hoyer. Brady might be hurting, but it should not impede him from being able to spread the ball around to several different receivers. And I feel the running game will also be productive enough to keep the Ravens from concentrating on stopping the passing offense. Okay, that's probably, technically, that's pretty sound, but let's remind everyone that let's remind everyone that the Ravens are still amongst the league leaders in rushing yards allowed. So if you think that just because the Patriots now have a healthy Fred Taylor and Sammy Morris and maybe Lawrence Maroney back and they're going to be able to run on Baltimore, okay, be careful. Because the Ravens still have, statistically speaking, a pretty stout run defense. James continues, now the turnovers have been an issue. But I am sure Bill Belichick will make sure they work on ball security in preparation for this game. He's going to go ahead and offer his score. James says, final score, Patriots 28, Ravens 17. Okay. Yeah, I'm sure all of this is actually, you know, spot-on stuff in terms of what the team is going to work on this week. Obviously, that practice has begun today. The game planning for Baltimore has begun today after having, you know, the day off. And I'm sure, well, especially as I suggested with Trent Dilfer earlier, you realize that, you know, all things being equal in the playoffs, a playoff game is usually decided by mistakes. How few you make as opposed to how much the opposition makes or how many the opposition makes. So you have to lessen your mistakes, and I'm talking penalties as well as turnovers, and you have to hope that the opposition shoots itself in the foot a bit more than you do. If that's the case, you might have a much stronger chance to win. And so I'm sure that's being discussed again today. We've got to take care of the ball. We have to make sure we're all on the same page. We don't need any procedure penalties. We don't need to jump off sides, yada, yada. So, you know, and that's stuff I'm sure that they work on every week, but they will have it drilled into their heads this week in particular because the importance of the game is much more magnified. After all, you win, you go on. You lose, you go home. That's what the second season is all about, right? Webradio at patriots.com, 508-543-7482 is the telephone number. Who or what do you feel like will be the difference maker in Sunday's playoff game with Baltimore? Is there one? Are there two? Is it a player? Is it a coach? Is it a scheme? What is it? Who or what is the difference maker? Send us your thoughts. Hour number two, straight ahead.
Well, it's that time of year again where Sunday means you're doing something football. Whether it's tailgating in the parking lot, throwing the pigskin around, or just hanging in and watching the game on the tube, it's all about football. And when you're not watching football or playing football, well, I think we both know you're thinking football. And all that can make you a little hungry. That's why there's the tasty snack wrap from McDonald's. Snack wraps now come in your choice of three flavors. New Chipotle barbecue, honey mustard, and ranch. And they're available with grilled or crispy chicken. Delicious and easy to eat. It's the perfect game time snack. So grab one today. And when you do, if you're looking at that chicken select and it kind of reminds you of a quarterback in the middle of the pocket, except now he's surrounded by cheddar jack cheese, ranch sauce, and lettuce, well, maybe you're thinking just a little too much about football. McDonald's. I'm loving it.
Just found out American Airlines flies to more than 250 cities in 40 countries. That's a lot of flying. So basically, that's 250 different things that I can put on my out-of-office auto reply. Why, I could say, island hopping in Hawaii, returning Friday. This is going to be fun. Better yet, swimming with whale sharks in Cancun and back on... Wait, that sounds dangerous. Oh, I know. How about samba dancing in Rio, back on Monday? Wish you were here. Well, not really. But with flights to over 250 cities in 40 countries, it's easy to get wherever I want to go on American. Even if it just happens to be sales meeting in Des Moines, back tomorrow.
What will you put on your out-of-office reply? 250 cities, 40 countries, unlimited possibilities. We know why you fly. We're American Airlines.
50 seasons of New England Patriots football. 3 Super Bowl championships. Endless memories.
Let's go!
Live them all at the Hall at Patriot Place, presented by Raytheon. Celebrate the greatest players, moments, and teams in Patriots history with sights and sounds that put you right in the action. Step inside the huddle as Tom Brady calls the plays. Go under the hood and review controversial calls just like a replay official. Learn the playbook from head coach Bill Belichick. Take your best shot at a game-winning field goal in the snow and let the confetti rain down while you gaze at the Patriots' three Vince Lombardi trophies.
Back-to-back, 3 out of 4.
Yes, it's a dynasty. And don't miss the 30-foot-high displays honoring the team's greatest players or the signature film showing the history of football in New England. The Hall at Patriot Place, presented by Raytheon, is located next to Gillette Stadium in Foxborough, Mass. And is open 7 days a week. Call 508-698-4800 for more information or go online to thehall@patriotplace.com. The Hall at Patriot Place, presented by Raytheon. An unforgettable, exciting, interactive experience.
Hour number two inside Patriots Playbook on American Airlines, Patriots.com radio. I'm John Rook, and in hour number two, Jerry Sandusky today, the play-by-play voice of the Baltimore Ravens, he's going to join us here in approximately 10 minutes on the program, so we'll get the Ravens' point of view on things as they reach the playoff round this year, and we'll be here for Sunday's 1 p.m. Eastern time kickoff against the Patriots. In the meantime, web radio at Patriots.com, 508-543-7482 is the telephone number. Tail end of the last hour, we had Murray from Nova Scotia ask what a split rule was, and it seems that he posted this very same question, and it looks like he downloaded indeed some old playbooks from a website that are basic schemes, and I don't know necessarily if it's Patriots play or somebody else's. But the term split rule is referring to a normal wide receiver lineup, which means you have, you have three, either two or three wide receivers on the line of scrimmage. And let's see, as I'm looking at this here, just talks about the different variations for receivers. And in a normal set, I think it refers to the receiver having to be a little bit off the line of scrimmage. I think split off of the line of scrimmage. Now, I may be oversimplifying things somewhat, but frankly, I think that's all it means. So in a normal offensive set, when you have your, you know, you got your five down linemen, and sometimes you have your tight end there on either side of the line, depending upon which direction of the that you think the play flow is going to be called for. And you have your receivers lined up either, you know, two or three wide, depending on the play call that you have. The split rule, I think, refers to primarily the wide receivers have got to be off of the line of scrimmage. I think it's a yard. So, at any rate, I'm thinking that kind of is what it boils down to. The X lines up at one point where I guess there is apparently a set number of yardage between him and the last offensive lineman on the line of scrimmage. Another wide receiver would then kind of split that difference between that receiver and the tackle. And then the third wide receiver, if you go that route, kind of lines up in the slot, sort of outside the hash. So, you know, it really, the split rule can vary, I think. And I realize that may be somewhat vague, but at least that's my interpretation of what the split rule involves. It all has to do with lining up and spacing and where the wide receivers are in relation to the line of scrimmage and the offensive lineman in the set. So I think really that's kind of what it boils down to, and I'm not sure if there's any other explanation for it. Now, I might be way off base, but at least that's kind of my interpretation as I looked at the play diagram that that you posted. Then I think that perhaps would be, you know, at least an educated guess on the matter. Whew, okay. Stumbled my way through that one, didn't I? Web radio at patriots.com is the email. All right, let's get back to it here. Chad says, let's talk about free agency. I love the business side of the NFL. I'm always thinking about how to better the team. Sounds like Chad, you have a job working the Patriots front office. It's obvious we need pressure on the quarterback, but we also need midfield coverage, meaning good coverage linebackers. I looked at all the free agents and I've seen a few awesome candidates. Number one, Elvis Dumervil. I think, and I know he would be a very successful pass rusher opposite of, I think, the standout this year, which has been Tully Banthkane. I know he's going to be tough to get, but I think Josh McDaniels owes us a favor or two, meaning maybe Brandon Marshall as well. Okay, well, just be, even if you think Josh McDaniels owes a favor, it doesn't mean that he's going to give you the favor. I mean, all's fair in love and football, okay? He now works for the Denver Broncos. He's not going to give the Patriots squat. Now, I think Dumervil is a restricted free agent. Now, but the only way, and again, I don't have the information in front of me, so maybe somebody can look that up and let me know. But that being said, if we do get a work agreement between the players and the owners here, I'm not sure, or let's say we don't, I'm not sure how that affects him. It might affect him in terms of his availability to other teams and or what the Broncos, if he signs with someone else, might get in compensation. So at any rate, I don't think he's unrestricted. I could be wrong, but I don't think he is. He also says here, D'Amico Ryans, I know with these two pass rushers, we could finally get some pressure on the opposing quarterback. If only one of them, I think Mark Anderson of the Bears would also be a very, I'm not even sure what that word is, candidate for the team. All of these candidates are young and still getting better and better every year. We also need more depth in our running back division, maybe Chester Taylor, a very underused backup in Minnesota with a lot of talent and versatility. This will leave a ton of room for building depth in the draft. Okay, Chad. All right, very good. Well, some good names that you brought up there. Rest assured that this team will check thoroughly available potential free agents before they rest their decision in the laps of a draftee for April's NFL draft. That's one of the good things about off-season radio here at Patriots.com where, you know, on Tuesdays and or Thursdays, you've got both, you know, Andy and Eric doing their due diligence on the combines, on the rookies, so you get a clearer picture on the rookies that might be available where the Patriots are going to draft and who might get taken above them. And then, of course, that should also lead you to believe that based on tendencies, who actually might be available free agent-wise for the Patriots to snag. So a couple of good names that you're there, but, you know, if they're that good, okay, then number one, why would the teams where they currently reside want to give up on them? That's the first thing you have to ask yourself. Number two, if they do give up on them and make and let them decide to go, whether it's restricted or not, then what's wrong with them? And you obviously have to investigate that. Team isn't just going to say, oh, geez, you know, Elvis, pat you on the back and, you know, go on your merry way. No, no, no. If the player's any good, they're going to get tremendous compensation for him. They're going to make sure that his contract situation is such where they would get something in return because they don't want to lose him outright. That's just a smart football decision. It's the same thing the Patriots would do if, you know, they want to hang on to somebody. You know, and if they're really that good, there's a chance the player could potentially even be franchised if they're not already an unrestricted free agent. And even if they are, well, you know, again, they'll make every effort to sign that player if that player is worth signing and still has some value to the organization. So it's one thing just to sit here and say, hey, this guy's good, that this guy's good, and that guy's good. You also have to consider why they're available. And if they are available, what's wrong with them? Where are the warts? You have to overturn the rocks, look at the seamy underside, and decide, okay, even with the baggage, even with the worms and the warts and everything that are there, is the guy still worth taking? So consider that when you start, you know, flipping names around and saying, hey, this guy would look good in a Patriots uniform. Okay, yeah, I agree with you. Would look great in a Patriots uniform. What's it going to cost you? All right, this one's going to come from, yikes, Adam. Okay, and Adam says, John, in my opinion, the biggest factor Sunday will be keeping Ray Rice and the Ravens' running game in check. I don't think the Ravens' receivers strike fear in any defense. So lock up Rice, make Flacco beat us through the air, and I like our chances that much more. I think the pass rush has somewhat improved over the last few weeks, and we get Warren and Wilfork back. That's a big if. We don't know yet. hopefully we'll begin to find that out today. In fact, I believe out on the field today, everybody but Dan Connolly and Wes Welker, so at least Wilfork and Warren, were visible in practice today during the media portion of the practice that we're allowed to see. Only Welker and Dan Connolly were not present. So Warren and Wilfork were out there, so I guess that's a step in the right direction. He says, we can get to Flacco on a few occasions. I think he will make enough mistakes to take advantage of. Also, with Welker being out, I am keeping my fingers crossed that we will use Watson and Baker more, as well as more diverse play calling on offense overall. Love the insight on the show. Thanks, and go Pats. Great that you brought that up, simply because that's exactly what Trent Dilfer told us in the opening hour of the program today. Watson and Baker and the use of the tight end can be a huge factor in favor of the Patriots if they just figure out a way to get them the ball. That could be, you know, both of those guys are going to be huge in trying to pick up the slack, not only for Welker being absent, but also for the inevitable double team that Randy Moss is going to face once he gets across the line of scrimmage and gets out into the open field. I really banged on this yesterday. And you know what's going to happen. If I'm Baltimore, the way I game plan for the Patriots is I'm making somebody other than Randy Moss beat me. So I'm going to have that safety ready to go over the top. I am not going to let Moss get that 40 and 50-yard gainer. Again, Trent Dilfer told us in the opening hour of the program today, in case you missed it. He said, playoff defense is all about not giving up the big gain. You don't mind a team getting yardage between the 20s. What you do mind is giving up the big play that gives the team solid momentum to get the ball into the end zone, or, heaven forbid, you give up a 40, 50, 60-yard touchdown run or pass. Don't give those up. They get five or six at a chunk here. Eventually, somewhere when you're in between the 20s, you have to force them off the field on third down. You can let them drive a little bit if they need to while you work your way into it, but, you know, you have to stiffen as you get close to that red zone. And, you know, that's certainly a huge part of any team's game plan. In other words, you're not going to shut teams down three and out and keep them backed up, you know, at their own, you know, 20, 25-yard line. It's just not going to happen. Some realism has to seep into it all here. Teams are going to move the football. Teams are going to score. You have to hope, though, that you make a team, and here's the bottom line to it all. You have to hope that whatever a team gets, that they've had to work hard to earn it. Because eventually that can wear on you a bit. This is all about, you know, teams being in shape and teams being ready and teams, you know, having that fourth quarter stamina and teams being in position to make big plays. And so, you know, don't worry so much about, you know, the scores or some of the early scores. Just make sure that, you know, as long as your offense is answering, your defense is keeping you in the game. And then when it comes time that you need to make a play, that, you know, your defense is in position to make that play. See, the biggest problem I feel that the Patriots defense has had this year is that whenever it's been time to shut a drive down, they haven't had a playmaker really step up and make that drive-killing play. That's been hard for the Patriots defensively to do. That's something I think that, frankly, with guys like Ray Lewis defensively for Baltimore, that, you know, they've been able to do, somewhat anyway, certainly in past years. Let's turn our attention now to a little bit more on the Ravens. Jerry Sandusky is the voice of the Baltimore Ravens on their radio network. He was kind enough to join us earlier this year in October when the Patriots and the Ravens played the first time, and he joins us here for round number two inside the playbook. Jerry, it's great to visit with you again. Thanks for the time today.
Hey, my pleasure. How are you?
Doing great. Doing great. So what do you think about making plays and stepping up and what kind of a position the Ravens defense might be in, considering now that the Patriots are, you know, admittedly going to be a little bit more shorthanded in offense than they were when the two teams played in October?
Well, John, I think there's two ways that you have to look at the Ravens defense. One, in terms of raw numbers and rankings, they're as highly ranked as they have been all season. And in the second half of the season, the defense really responded to the new coordinator, Greg Madison. I think he really got a much better feel for calling his defenses and how to use his personnel. That's the plus side. You've got Ray Lewis does make plays. Terrell Suggs is healthier again. Ed Reed played last week. So, you know, playmakers are back in position, and I think they're pretty much up to speed. But the concern the Ravens have coming to New England is with the injuries in their secondary. You know, Ardarius Webb was a rookie third-round pick who really did a good job at corner. They lost him in Week 14, and, you know, they've replaced him with Chris Carr, who's a quality nickel. But, you know, the Oakland Raiders in the first half last week with Charlie Fry carved up that Ravens secondary pretty good. And, you know, I mean no disrespect to Charlie Fry, but Charlie Fry is no Tom Brady.
Well, I think that seems to be, at least my initial impression here is, as we start kind of breaking this down for the first time really today, is that where the Patriots have an advantage might be against the Ravens' corners. So I would ask you then, from a Baltimore perspective, what you think might be the best way to kind of combat that and where you think the team might go.
Well, you know, I think you're going to have to use a combination of different coverages with some blitzes. And I would say some because I think Tom Brady is right on par with Peyton Manning when it comes to burning defenses that do not disguise coverages and blitzes well. You know, the Ravens have made that mistake a couple of times this year where some of their less experienced corners have given away. They've tipped their hand early on, and they've left other corners in tough one-on-one situations. And if you do that schematically, Tom Brady's going to find Randy Moss. We all know that, if you leave him in man coverage against an inferior talent. So I would say that the real kind of battle in this game is going to be between the time the Patriots break the huddle and the time Brady snaps the ball. Whoever does the better job of disguise and read wins the play.
Yeah, I think it's a great way to put it, disguising and reading. And I think one of the factors then for Baltimore would also be obviously to get pressure on Brady, force him to have to really hurry his hot reads because, you know, it's going to be a little bit more risky. You don't know what the trust factor is yet between, say, a guy like Brady and Julian Edelman, who now has to fill in those hot read situations for a guy like Wes Welker. That might put a little bit more emphasis, a little bit more importance on, say, a guy like Terrell Suggs.
Oh, absolutely. Suggs has to have a big game. That's the beauty of January football. You have to ask your big-name players to have big games. The Patriots haven't gone 11-1 in the postseason at home because Tom Brady has played ordinary on Sundays in January. And the Ravens have to do the same thing with defense. Terrell Suggs has to play big. Ed Reed has to play big, has to make a couple of plays. Because if this game plays out anything like it did in October, John, you know, you're looking at two plays making the difference. So, you know, is it going to be a Randy Moss play? Is it going to be an Ed Reed play? Is it going to be Terrell Suggs with a play? Is it going to be Tom Brady with a play? I mean, that's your game.
Yeah, I also believe that a lot of fans also think likewise, is that the Patriots defensively will welcome back guys like Wilfork and Warren at tackle, and they were at practice today, so maybe that's a step in the right direction for New England. But I think there are some folks around here worried about trying to slow down Ray Rice, to be quite honest.
Well, Ray Rice is such a versatile back. You know, most teams have to have a primary back and then a third down back. Well, Ray Rice leads all running backs in receptions this year in the NFL, and he's the Ravens' leading, you know, ground gainer. Now, last week it was Willis McGahee who had the hot hand running the ball. But the thing that Ray Rice does for Cam Cameron is he doesn't have to go to situational substitutions unless he wants to. He can go more hot hand. You know, if Willis is hot, let Willis stay in there. If Ray's hot, you let Ray stay in there. And that's a real advantage to a defense, especially when the Ravens go to their no-huddle package. They've had some success with that, using it where you wouldn't necessarily expect it. You know, middle of the first quarter, start of the second quarter, not just at the end of each half or the end of the game, but at a time where they want to keep the opponent's base defense on the field, Ray Rice's versatility allows the Ravens to do that offensively. But as you mentioned, you know, the return of some of the strength to your defensive line, you know, I don't think, John, there's much in the way of mystery of what Bill Belichick's going to try to do to the Ravens. He's going to try to take away Derek Mason, the primary read on most passing routes, and he's going to try to take away the check down pass to Ray Rice, which means for the Ravens to excel offensively, Joe Flacco's going to have to do something he has not done consistently well this year, and that is find his second and his third receivers.
Interesting. I also think that an X factor here is McGahee, as you suggested. Certainly looked like he had a nose for the end zone this past weekend, but he averaged better, what, than 10 yards a carry last week? I mean, that's phenomenal.
Yeah, 16 carries, 167 yards. But, again, no disrespect, the Raiders' defense is not, you know, a playoff defense yet. Maybe pass defense, but the run defense isn't quite up to speed other than maybe Richard Seymour. Mm-hmm. But, you know, Willis had one of those games, and Willis has a nose for the end zone. He tied the team record this year with 14 touchdowns. Cam Cameron does like to use him in the red zone because, you know, Willis has that strike ability when he gets near the end zone. So, you know, I think if you're looking at any situational substitutions come Sunday, you may see Willis more in the red zone than Ray Rice.
Interesting. Jerry Sandusky, again, is the voice of the Baltimore Ravens for the radio network, joining us here in the playbook. You brought up Cam Cameron's name a couple of times. What do you think his strengths are as a play caller, and where do you think his weaknesses lie?
Well, I think his big strength is his ability to adjust to personnel and to situations. So he came out this year, and they were a pass-oriented offense. Joe Flacco had started to mature. They were really slinging the ball around. And then defensive coordinators adjusted to Joe, and they forced him to do some things he wasn't comfortable with. So Cam Cameron retooled his approach, and he started to use a six-man offensive line, an unbalanced line. He put Chris Chester, a guard, a tight end, a fullback, starts to move some things around. And they went back to more of a run-oriented offense, which a lot of teams won't do. You know, they're going to stick with what works. So he changed the primary focus of their offense midway through the season. They did it to try to buy Joe Flacco a little bit more time as far as play-action passing, and it worked brilliantly. I think maybe as far as a weakness, if Cam has a weakness, it's this. Cam sees what players are going to become. He knows what Joe Flacco is going to be in his fourth year, and perhaps sometimes he pushes those players a little farther than perhaps they're ready to be at this moment. But I think all good coaches try to play to their talent's potential, not just to their current ability.
Mm-hmm. Todd Heap caught 53 balls this year. Can he be, should he be a factor in this game?
Well, he has to be a factor in this game. He has to be the guy that gives the Ravens downfield presence between the hash marks so that if Belichick finds himself in a cover two, Flacco's got to read that and get a zipper route right up the middle to Todd Heap. And the reason Todd had a bigger year this year than he's had since 2006, he's healthy again. And you can see that in his explosiveness. He's done a great job of going up in the air for balls. He gets in one-on-one matchups now with a cornerback or a linebacker who's an inch or two smaller than him. And Flacco has the comfort and the confidence to go and kind of put up the jump ball to Todd Heap, and Heap has the physical tools to go get him. And there's no doubt, for the Ravens to win Sunday, Todd Heap has to have a game where he has four or five catches and maybe even a touchdown or two.
Jerry, where do you feel like this team's strengths really lie right now coming into this weekend's game? And conversely, where are the weaknesses?
Well, I think the weakness that I've seen throughout the season is the inconsistency of the passing game to take advantage of the third and the fourth target. We've seen too many games where Mark Clayton is not a factor, where Kelly Washington is not a factor, where Demetrius Williams is not a factor. And while, you know, you'd love to see Derek Mason have a huge game come Sunday, I just don't see any reason to expect Bill Belichick not to take him out of the game with coverage. So the weakness for the Ravens is going to have to, conversely, become a strength Sunday to win. Some of their secondary targets are going to have the biggest game of the year. That will have to happen on offense. As far as overall strength, defensively, they're healthy again. Haloti Ngata is an absolute beast and is now kind of the point of the arrow of that defense. He sets the tone. Ray Lewis is still the leader. But Haloti Ngata forces offenses to change direction from the very first step. He takes away the middle of the field, and that really creates havoc for opposing offenses.
You also mentioned earlier that you felt like a guy like Ed Reed, even though he'd been banged up, that he's getting back in there now, that he has to come up big. I would concur. I think there has to be a playmaker, somebody also that's going to come over the top and make certain that Randy Moss doesn't get loose on you for something deep.
You're right, because, John, you can't just sit back and play, you know, a cautious, conservative game plan, because Tom Brady and Randy Moss are going to tear you up. I was looking at the game tape 2 weeks ago from Jacksonville, and I watched the Moss touchdown in the back of the end zone on a crossing pattern when the Jags had a three-man rush. Brady had all day, and Randy Moss just kind of ran through the defense, found a soft spot, touchdown. Mm-hmm. And that's what the Patriots will do to you if you just give Brady time and Moss room. That said, you know, you can't be a riverboat gambler and just kind of bring 9-10 guys on the blitz every play. So for Greg Madison, it becomes, you know, the cat-and-mouse game with Bill Belichick and your offense. When to bring pressure, when to mix up coverages, when to gamble, and when to kind of use your resources to take away Tom Brady's time and Tom Brady's step. You know, that's a big thing. You don't have to sack Tom Brady, but you got to take away his step when he wants to throw. And it's not a matter of, okay, let's do that all the time, because that's not possible. Right. It becomes a matter of, can you do it at the strategically right time? I think the outcome of the game hangs in that balance.
Yeah, it's the old playoff chess match, and you're going to have both teams going back and forth. You know there's going to be some back and forth in the team, and really it's all about, you know, trying to move your pieces in position, much like in chess, and forcing the other team into a checkmate situation where you have them buckled in. Let me ask you your thoughts here on Welker overall, because when you first heard that he was down and he wasn't going to come back and certainly be available for this weekend, did you feel like that improved Baltimore's chances to win? I think we lost him. I think we may have lost him. All right, we'll see if we can get him back on, because it sounded like he was traveling anyway in his vehicle. If we can get him back, we'll definitely get him back. But Jerry Sandusky, again, the radio voice of the Ravens, with us here, offering some pretty good insight. And can't argue a single thing that he might have said right there in terms of some of the names of the players in terms of importance will be needed to come up big for the Ravens. All right, we got Jerry again. Sorry about that. Don't you just love cell phones?
Oh, they're wonderful. Hey, listen, what did we do 10 years ago, right?
I'm beginning to wonder. Last night was kind of funny. I actually had to change over my cable TV and some of my phone stuff here at home. Had the serviceman in here for like 6 hours. And we sat around, my wife, my son, and I, and we kind of looked at each other, and I said, this is terrible. We don't know what to do.
What happened to board games at home, right?
I said, this is awful. This is just
terrible. Well, hey, John, before you lost me, we were talking about the original board game, chess.
Yes.
Chess is a great game when the cable goes out. And have you ever noticed in January in the playoffs, we never compare NFL football to cable TV or digital games. We always compare it to chess.
Yeah, isn't that great?
That's because chess is the classic. And here's the classic. When the Ravens and the Patriots are playing, we know it. You know, we know the basics of what's going to happen. What we don't know is who's going to make the plays that make the difference.
Right.
You know, Bill Belichick and John Harbaugh and their coaches, their job from last Sunday until this coming Sunday is to put their players in position to make plays. Then it becomes, is it Ed Reed who makes the pick on a Tom Brady gamble, or is it Tom Brady who cashes in and beats Ed Reed when he jumps around on a gamble? That's the part we don't know.
That's exactly right, and you're right. That's the fun and the anticipating all. The question that I wanted to ask you before we lost your cell phone was, when you first heard that Wes Welker had gone down against Houston and that he was not going to be available for the game this weekend, did you feel like Baltimore's chances improved to win the game?
Well, I don't think that it hurts Baltimore's chances, but unlike some of the national media, I'm not thinking, wow, they lose Wes Welker and suddenly this is a team that's diminished by 80%. I saw Julian Edelman in October. He's a Wes Welker clone. They use him the same way they use Wes Welker. Now, not to take anything away from the NFL's leading receiver, the one thing, and you touched on this, I think the Patriots lose a little bit of, is the hot read flexibility.
Mm-hmm.
You know, as a rookie receiver in his first game, you know, Julian Edelman is not going to have quite as much of a feel for some of the things the defense is going to do to him. But luckily for him, Tom Brady is. And I suspect Tom Brady's going to have a long crash course in tutoring the kid on hot routes this week. Other than that, I don't see the Patriots losing all that much because you have so much other weaponry.
Yeah, we've actually been torn right down the middle on that around here in terms of where we think the Patriots or what they might have lost for this game in terms of, you know, Welker's importance on the field. Some feel like it'll matter a little. There are others who feel like it'll matter quite a bit. And I think maybe that's just ultimately the respect that Welker is finally getting.
Oh, he deserves that respect. If there's a loss other than hot zone, you lose the depth. You lose that breather. If Welker needs a play where he's got to come out and they still want to run an underneath route, now you lose putting in fresh legs with Edelman because he has to be in there on every play. So, you know, I think it's going to be some of those nuances, reads on hot routes, and maybe a little bit of fatigue because you lose the depth having Edelman play all the snaps instead of coming in off the bench. But, you know, the Patriots didn't put together the track record they've had over the years because they couldn't absorb the loss of one key player.
Jerry, a final for you, final one for you here. How much will it help or hurt Baltimore having the knowledge of that 27-21 game back in October, have them prepare for this one?
Well, I think it helps them focus on the two areas where they have to improve from that October game, and that is turnovers. Three, I'll give you three, really. Turnovers, penalties and red zone mistakes. Mm-hmm. You go back to that game, Joe Flacco throws a red zone interception at the end of the first half. Mark Clayton drops a red zone pass on fourth down in the final minute of the game at the 8-yard line. So the Ravens went into that October game feeling good about themselves, but not fully ready to step up and play with the top-tier teams in the NFL. And we've seen that throughout the season, and when they lose to the best teams, invariably it's some combination of penalties and red zone mistakes. So I think the October game should help the Ravens really dial in their preparation this week of knowing getting to the red zone is not the key. Thriving there is, and avoiding negative yards with penalties and mistakes.
I lied. I got one more. Are they disappointed in 9-7?
I think they're a little bit disappointed in 9-7 because they know they were a field goal away in Minnesota from going 10-6 and having back-to-back double-digit wins. But it was tempered a little bit by the realization that in his second year, John Harbaugh is the only head coach that hired a year ago has taken his team to the playoffs in back-to-back years. Jim Zorn from that class is gone. Tony Sperano didn't get the Dolphins back. And Mike Smith didn't get the Falcons back. So, yeah, they really wanted that double-digit 10th win, but they're satisfied that they are at least back in play in the playoffs for a second year in a row.
It's all about getting in the tournament, right?
Really is, because you know what? It's a little bit like your grade point average in college. When was the last time somebody asked you your grade point average? Once you start playing in the playoffs, everybody's 0-0 or 1-0 or 2-0. Anytime you have a digit in the right-hand column, you're not in the playoffs anymore.
That's true. It's all over. Jerry Sandusky again, voice of the Baltimore Ravens. Jerry, thanks for the visit. Safe travels up here this weekend.
And I hear I better bundle up, right?
Yeah, I think that's a safe bet. New England, mid-January, yeah. Bring the mittens.
We shall do that. Hey, always a pleasure visiting with you.
Thank you, Jerry. Appreciate the time. Jerry Sandusky, the voice of the Baltimore Ravens, with us in the playbook. Hopefully you glean something out of that in terms of the Ravens' philosophies, what they're thinking about the matchup with New England. Maybe that'll help you formulate your own opinions when it comes down to trying to figure out who's going to win this game, if you can look at it somewhat down the middle of the road without, you know, your Patriots colored glasses on. But that's okay, too. We allow all types, as we said earlier in the program, all types are welcome. All opinions are welcome. Let's take a time out, and then we're going to talk about some of those opinions. We'll read some of those opinions. Webradio@patriots.com is our email address, and our phone number again, 508-543-7482. Who or what will be the difference maker this Sunday in round one of the AFC playoffs? We'll hear what you have to say coming up in the playbook.
So, Pat, what time does our flight get in? It
says here American Airlines flight 505 gets in at 7:05.
Perfect. Game starts at 7:30. I suppose you know our gate number, too?
Yep. It says so right here on my phone, Brian.
Yeah, you think you know everything because you have one of those smartphones.
What's wrong? You're jealous because I can check AA.com, get flight info, gates and times, pretty much anything flight-related?
I like to keep it simple. You know, that's how I roll. I'm old school. So I travel with one of these.
Brian, that's a cordless phone.
Right. No cord.
From your home.
That's right.
How's that working out for you?
To be honest, the range is somewhat limited. But only when I travel.
Find all the flight info you need for the big game or the big meeting at aa.com/mobile. We know why you fly. We're American Airlines.
Man, it's football season. Usually the house is decked out by now. You know, the football lamps and the big wall posters.
Dude, it is decked out. But this year, I'm working on a higher level.
Yeah, I'm not seeing it.
Well, you're just not on that level. I've got Razor Sharp Fios TV from Verizon, so I don't just watch the game, I feel like I'm in it. The whole place has ultra-quick Fios internet, so my computer becomes my own personal press box.
So, no little football helmet soaps in the bathroom this year?
Sadly, no. But with ESPN MVP, I get stats, scores, and highlights sent straight to my wireless phone.
With Verizon's Fios TV and internet, plus wireless apps like ESPN MVP, you have everything you need to take your football experience to the next level. Verizon, official telecommunications provider of the New England Patriots. Select VCast phone and VPAC subscription required. Fios available in select areas.
You are so far beyond football-shaped serving trays.
Patriot Place in Foxborough is New England's premier entertainment, dining, and shopping destination. Experience the Hall at Patriot Place, presented by Raytheon, an interactive museum dedicated to the history of New England football. The family will want to check out the latest summer movie at Showcase Cinema Deluxe, or a concert or comedy show at Showcase Live. Shop retailers and the region's only Bass Pro Shops. And of course, there's always dinner and drinks as you dine outdoors overlooking Gillette Stadium. Experience world-class medical care at Brigham and Women's Mass General Healthcare Center, located on-site at Patriot Place. The region's only four-star hotel, the Renaissance Hotel and Spa, offers luxurious accommodations, including the ultimate in pampering at Spa Epochette. Special events are always happening at Patriot Place, from Rock the Plaza every Saturday and Sunday, to the Kids Club Storytime every Tuesday, to the area's largest plastic car display. Patriot Place is located in Foxborough next to Gillette Stadium, and parking is free. Visit patriot-place.com for complete store and restaurant hours and event listings. Patriot Place. Shop, dine, enjoy.
Round and third, heading for home here in the playbook for a Wednesday. Of course, we'll have a busy day for you again tomorrow here from 2 to 4 p.m. Eastern time inside the playbook. Russell Baxter, ESPN, will be with us. Who else is going to be with us tomorrow?
Stash, a gentleman from a sports radio station down there who we spoke with earlier when we played the Ravens. I can't remember if you were here or not. He may have spoken with Chris Price.
Okay. Very good. So we'll have some Ravens smack talk tomorrow, maybe?
Hoping.
Good.
I bet you
good.
You could get the guy all revved up. Chris Price was a little tame with him.
Is that right? Why, did he try to get worked up with Chris? Was that the deal?
No, not at all.
Oh, not at all? Okay, just wondering.
But I think you have that ability to evoke that.
Who, me?
Look what you did to Fred. I heard he was crying after the show.
Yeah, but you're going to have to play him the Trent Dilfer man love, you know, make him feel better.
I mentioned that to Eric when he popped in to see if we needed him.
Yeah.
And he goes, so you're telling me that Trent Dilfer agreed that the Patriots are a better team without Wes Welker?
Well, I don't think he said that specifically, but he also thought that the Patriots would win the game. I don't think he said the Patriots are better without Welker.
Right.
And frankly, I don't know. I don't think
I don't remember
Fred
hearing
didn't
that
say that either, did he?
He may have before you came on.
Okay. Wow. Wow.
He was saying that this Patriots team is better than the Patriots team in Week 4.
Yes, and I think that specifically is what.
But that's the difference. This Patriots team doesn't have Wes Welker. They had Welker in Week 4.
Which leaves you to infer that it's a better team without Welker, which is really not what was being said. But, okay. Well, that's good. We'll have some smack talk tomorrow here in the playbook. I like that. You know, maybe we have to have some fans maybe, you know, bring some smack as well and fire off their emails, you know? That'd be good. I'd be up for that. Patriots made some roster adjustments today. Obviously, some of it is... you know, it's fait accompli anyway. Wes Welker's been placed on injured reserve. Linebacker Thomas Williams has been signed from the practice squad to the 53-man roster to replace him. Wide receiver Nick Moore and Robert Ortiz have been signed to the practice squad. Darnell Jenkins has also been placed on the practice squad injured list with an ankle injury. So those are the actual official moves when it comes to replacing Welker on the roster that were just announced a short while ago for the team. All right, a little bit of a history lesson for you here before we get back to the emails. Number one, Patriots now qualified for the playoffs 17 times in the team's 50-year history. Seems like more, doesn't it? I guess that tells you a couple of things. Number one, how unbelievably huge the decade of the aughts has been for the New England franchise. Number two, how really bad things were, you know, in the earlier days of the franchise. When you consider that, you know, in the 50-year history of the team, they're still not batting .500 getting to the playoffs as often as they've gone to the playoffs in this decade. Wow. It's amazing. Just, you know, again, just a little history here to give you an appreciation for where the team has come from to where it is right now and what our expectations are of this team. Sometimes I do think that, you know, on occasion, our expectations are a little overreaching. 11 of those 17 playoff berths have come in the 16 years since Robert Kraft purchased this team back in 1994. 11 of the 17 have come in 16 years. It's pretty amazing, really, when you think about it. They had 6 total playoff berths in the previous 34 years of existence, if my math is correct. 12 division championships now, 7 in the last 9 seasons. And the Patriots, you know, certainly have had a little bit of a run going where that's concerned in this decade. 7 of the past 9 division champions in the AFC East. Patriots have won 14 playoff games in this decade. That ties the 1970s Pittsburgh Steelers and Dallas Cowboys for the most playoff victories by any NFL team in any decade since the 1930s. So put that in your pipe and smoke it, Bill Polian. That's exactly what I said. 14 playoff wins this decade. It ties the 70s Steelers and Cowboys for the most playoff wins by any NFL team in the decade, in any decade since the 1930s. Pittsburgh and Dallas both won 14 games in 70. Between 70 and 79, New England won 14 postseason games from 2000 to right now. So there you go. Patriots have won more than half of their games for the 9th straight year, finishing 10-6. Again, that's above 500 now. That's the 9th straight year they finished above 500. First team to win more than half of their games in 9 straight seasons since free agency began in 1993. I find that one interesting to the point where it tells me the Patriots have obviously handled free agency in terms of signing guys, who to sign, when to sign them, and where to go find free agent guys as well, if not better than anybody else in the NFL over the past 16, almost 17 seasons. I think that's a significant number that you probably won't hear mentioned again, but it just tells you where this team's philosophy has come from and where it still might be headed. Do they make all the right moves? No. Have they made a lot of right moves? Absolutely. Patriots have now won 9 or more games in 13 of the 16 seasons since the Kraft family has owned this football team. Patriots won 11 playoff games from 2003 to 2007. That tied the NFL's highest playoff victory total over a 5-season span. New England won 3 playoff games in 03, 3 again in 04, 1 in 05, 2 in 06, 2 in 07. So there is a trend there. There is still some experience on the team that has been a part of that. Read into that Tom Brady, and you hope that that helps this team when it comes down to getting it started here for 2010 with this game this weekend against Baltimore. All right, Howard sends an email, and he says, John, although it seems like a simple question, I think it is much more complex than it would appear. Asking, again, who you think or what you think the difference maker might be for this Sunday. And Howard says, number one, I think the guys in PFW had a great point about a difference maker in that Coach Belichick will take the Wes Welker injury, turn it into a disrespect thing for the offense, and then motivate the offense to show the world that although Wes Welker is a great player, he isn't the entire team. That's the first difference maker, he says. And that's a good point, Howard. Number two, I think a combination of Falk, Maroney, Edelman, Standback makes a difference by combining to make up for the loss of Welker in productivity. Let me also throw in there, Howard, Watson and Baker. I mentioned it yesterday. I'm going to repeat it here. Patriots have to find the tight end on offense this weekend. They can't just use those guys as blockers. You got to throw those two guys into the equation. That gives you then 6 options to make up the difference for not only Welker, but for the double team coverage that Randy Moss is invariably going to get. And then he says, number 3, Merriweather, Sanders, McGowan, stepping up and stopping Rice and McGahee and forcing Flacco to beat them through the air. I am optimistic about this game. I think it will be different than the first game earlier this year, and I tend to agree with Trent Dilfer. If the Pats play their A game, they'll win this by 10 to 14 points. I think the Ravens are a very good team, but are not the great D of the Super Bowl era, and actually did lose a lot of their aggressive style when Rex Ryan went to New York. Then, of course, there is the Coach Belichick edge against the team's second go-around in the same season. I forget what the record is, but as I recall, it's pretty good. Time will tell, but I feel good about this week. All right, Howard, excellent. As always, good to hear you, good to hear from you, and good to have you chip in. Craig says, hey, John, this is the first time I've emailed your show, and although I have emailed PFW in the past, before I go on to my point, I want to thank everyone involved in Patriots Radio for the great work they do, especially on the playbook. Thank you. Jason, thank you. Brian, thank you.
Anytime.
Yeah, absolutely. Way to go, guys. Here we go. I have three factors that I think are very important this weekend's game against the Ravens. Number one, stopping Ray Rice. The health of Will Fork and Warren will be the difference on defense. Ray Rice is a great weapon for the Ravens, and if Will Fork and Warren are able to play at their usual levels, then I think we'll be able to contain Rice. Number two, Fred Taylor. He has to be a factor in the run game. I feel the Welker injury has to push a shift in the balance of this offense. The team needs to run consistently. Taylor has a history that is more consistent than any other back on this team. His legs are relatively fresh compared to the others. So if he can run effectively against a stout run defense, then the Patriots would have a great weapon that ideally would open up the passing game. Okay, pretty sound thinking there. That's good. And then number three, home field advantage. Our home crowd needs to be loud and disruptive, something that it seldom ends up being. The downside of going to games is sitting amongst a crowd that is waiting to be entertained versus helping the team win. If the crowd is a factor, it'll be a major advantage that the Patriots don't consistently have. So if those three things happen, I think it'll be a win 24-13 for the Patriots.
I agree on the crowd.
Yeah, I agree too. Our crowd has been lackluster most of this season. Craig from Boxborough. Good email, Craig. Good job out of you. Oh, here's the practice participation report. It came out a little early today. Let's see.
Minus Baltimore.
What's that?
Missing Baltimore.
Well, naturally. But let's see if it means anything. I think I said earlier that it was going to be Connolly and Welker that did not participate, and I believe that is the case. Yep. They're the only two that missed. Full participation from Brady, Edelman, Jarvis Green, Nick Kazzer, Sean Springs, Ty Warren, Benjamin Watson, and Vince Wilfork. Full participation. So that is a step in the old right direction.
Straight cash, homie.
Straight cash, homie. I agree with you, Randy. Okay, this one comes from TG and NJ. John, the difference in the game could be what Christian Fourier, I'm not even going to make an attempt to spell his last name, from Patriots All Access, calls tight end love. I can reference that term here on the playbook. Wouldn't dare mention it on PFW. Andy would have a field day. Yeah, that's true. But, you know, hey, Andy's also big on sophomoric humor. It's the tight ends that could make the difference. Yeah. Laughing like a little girl. It's the tight ends that could make the difference in Sunday's game in both blocking duties to protect Brady as well as receiver duties. Maybe Watson and Baker will have a good day. You know, hey, TG, I'm right there with you. I think I've said it all along as we started this week. You've got to include Watson and Baker in the discussion in terms of taking some of the slack up from missing Welker and having the double coverage again, invariably follow Randy Moss no matter where he goes on the field on Sunday. Tight ends, baby, tight ends. It's going to be huge. Next, Brett says, Brett in Orlando, this is what makes the NFL playoffs so great. In basketball and baseball, the best team usually wins, as they should in a seven-game series. The great thing about the NFL, like college basketball, is that all the top seeds rarely make it to the Final Four, which means that I can almost guarantee it won't be a Chargers, Colts, and Saints-Vikings final. I would much rather get lucky from a tuck rule, a tipped ball, or a dumb penalty on the other team, because those things are what the NFL playoffs usually come down to anyway. Given that I have no idea who wins, but if nothing unusual happens, Pats win. Well, that's an interesting perspective. I think there would probably be some fans, Brett, who would say, well, that's what's wrong with the NFL, that you can't take regular season performance or things along those lines to the bank because the playoffs are so unpredictable. But I would also argue at the same time, though, that's what makes the NFL the number one sport in America. Fact is that, you know, the excitement, the unpredictability, and when the playoffs are here, you just throw everything up in the air. It's a crapshoot. It really is a crapshoot. That's exactly what Brett in Orlando says. So, you know, he's got a lot of right in that email. Next is Jonathan, who says, great job all you guys there at Patriots.com. My email today is regarding the pessimism from many as to whether or not Edelman can do a good enough job playing in Welker's role this weekend's game against the Ravens. I hate the fact that, yet again, a very needed component to our offense has fallen to injury, but from all we have seen from Edelman so far is that he has the ability to make moves which change plays. I think if he's been given the ball often enough, he may make enough of those plays to help change the outcome of the game. Let's face it, situation isn't favorable for us. However, Belichick will make adjustments. I, too, am not comfortable with the fact that Welker could be out for an undetermined amount of time, but this new event does change how we have to approach the remainder of the season. Belichick could unexpectedly use this new wrinkle as yet another unexpected positive. Somebody else has referred to that, so we're on the same page, Link, here. This, in combination with some of the early 2000s Belichick trickery, could be exactly what we need. Thanks for reading my email. Go Pats. Thanks for sending your email. And let's see, we'll try to bang out as many of these as we got. And again, I thank you for sending them today. Email about the team putting Welker officially on IR. Oh, Andrew, here we go. Andrew is sending from Sandy, Utah. John, who or what will be the difference maker this Sunday? I don't think that there will be one person who makes a difference this week. Rather, I think it will be the experience that the Patriots have. If I am correct, the Patriots still have four players from the 01 Super Bowl team, somewhere around nine from the 03-04 Super Bowl teams. I realize that this is a very different team than those past years, yet I think I'm like many who have a hard time seeing the Patriots lose in the postseason. I feel that Coach Belichick and the other veterans will have this team prepared, focused, and ready. As I think about the other teams in the playoffs, I don't know how many teams have the playoff Super Bowl experience like this team has, and at the positions they have it. Belichick at coach, Brady at the most important position on the field, Kevin Falk in the backfield, Ty Warren, Vince Wilfork on the D-line, Matt Leitz, Stephen Neal, Dan Copeland on the O-line. Again, I realize there are some great teams out there this year, but I am confident that the veterans and their experience will make the difference, not just this week, but the entire postseason. Well written. And, you know, the experience factor is something we haven't talked a lot about yet, because I think it does kind of vary from year to year, but you did bring up some very good points. Eric J. in New Hampshire. Hello, love your show. The thing I'm most worried about is what Troy Brown alluded to last night on CSNNE, Comcast Sports in New England. He says, who is going to be the tougher team on Sunday? I hope it won't be the Ravens. Well, you know, that kind of goes along the lines, Eric, of, you know, teams making fewer mistakes, almost a war of attrition. And I think a team that is mentally tough is the team that is not going to make the mistake, not going to, you know, jump off sides, not going to commit the holding penalty, not going to block in the back, not going to, you know, fumble the football. So the team that makes the fewer mistakes, I think, invariably, more often than not, is the team that is tougher mentally. And I'm sure that's part of what Troy Brown had to be talking about, to be quite honest. Good stuff. Nicholas sends this one. On your program, you're asking for our opinion of a difference maker this day, in this game. In my opinion, it will be the offensive play calling for the Patriots. Do you feel they need to be more creative, run the ball more, use the tight ends more? In my opinion, they have become pretty predictable at times. Also, the play calling doesn't make sense to me at times. For example, in the last game against Houston, Patriots were tied with 5 minutes left. They threw the ball twice, the second being a desperate deep interception by Brady. Why not run the ball from the start in this series? Both Taylor and Green Ellis were averaging over 4.5 yards a carry for the game. They had plenty of time, did not need to win the game on that play. Can't disagree with you there. That's one of the things I'd love to have nitpicked, but frankly yesterday gave up on because the game ultimately didn't mean anything. He says, on the defensive side, I think they need to treat Ray Rice as they did Marshall Faulk in the 0-1 Super Bowl win, take him out of the game. I do not think Flacco can beat the Patriots, especially if you can keep Mason under control. Maybe put springs on him. He did a great job holding Andre Johnson, arguably the best receiver in the league, 265 yards. It's Nick from North Andover, Mass. Thank you, Nick. No disagreements. William. John, I heard it being called a chess game. No offense, but I play chess better than probably 99.8% of you listeners.
You lying your ass off.
Football is more difficult than chess. A bishop always moves like a bishop. If a tight end misses a block or an inside linebacker beats a block you knew was coming, it's akin to a bishop moving like a knight for no reason whatsoever. Oh, God.
Attention, you are all losers.
No, William, I understand where you're going from. I, you know, it's just I didn't realize that we were going to get into chess strategy now. I think what he meant, though, and surely William understands that, maybe he's doing this tongue-in-cheek here, who knows, somewhat sarcastically. But, you know, it's talked about the strategy of going back and forth and analyzing, you know, the entire scene before you make your move, make your play, which you have to do in chess. It's certainly about the individual moves in chess, I would agree with you. Hey, a piece on the chessboard is only going to move one way, as opposed to, you know, you've got 11 parts on offense moving 11 different ways sometimes and 11 parts on defense moving 11 different ways sometimes. So the number of possibilities anybody can move are infinite, very much unlike chess. Does that make sense? God, I hope so. All right, Sean, you get the final word. He says, John, did we pass over Ray Rice in the draft? Yeah, I think we did. Where was Rice taken in the draft? What does anybody recall what pick number he was? Yeah, I think so. I think so. But at the same time, though, the Patriots, I don't know that Rice, while he was probably on the big board, I'm guessing that the Patriots never really gave Rice serious consideration because they felt like they were okay at running back. So I really think it's kind of a moot question because I don't think they were in the market for a Ray Rice. Obviously, you'd love to have a guy like that based on what he's shown us now in his relatively short tenure in the NFL, but I don't think that he was on the front burner, so to speak. So passing over him is really kind of a moot point, at least at this stage of the game. Right now, you just hope that he doesn't pass the Patriots over and that they can figure out a way to at least slow him down, if not stop him altogether on Sunday. Hey, coming up, where's Christina? Is she there? Christina?
Here.
I'm
here.
There she is.
Yeah.
Hey, Christina Acker's here.
How's it going?
Good. What's happening with you?
Nothing. Just another Wednesday. We're making that transition here on Shop Talk from regular season to postseason and playoff gear in the shop. And
awesome.
I guess Randy Moss masks are back. So.
Yeah, well, I can imagine. And, you know, I guess that's a really a good question to ask, though. But, I mean, because of, you know, the incident a couple of weeks ago, have they been flying off the shelves?
I think there was they were very much in demand after the little give and take with Moss and the 12-year-old in the stands last weekend. So hopefully we'll be seeing a lot more of those in the stands.
I was about to say, do you think we'll see a whole section of Randy Moss masks coming up on Sunday?
It's possible. I don't know when they got him in the shop. I think it was today. So that's what the guys are telling me now. It was today. So if anybody wants their mask, better get it now before Sunday.
We should give those away today.
We should. It's up to these guys. They make the rules. Congratulations, John, on tomorrow night. Are you looking forward to it?
You know, we haven't really had a chance to sort of go over that here on the program, have we?
You haven't, have you?
No. You know, I'm disappointed we don't get to have a chance to have our little wager.
I know.
You would have looked so cute in Christina's cheerleader outfit.
No. Oh, actually, I would not have. Trust me.
Oh, we would have made that work, definitely. That's a shame. But I hope your team does well.
So what do you think? You're going to give me an educated decision on this one?
You know, I kind of just removed myself from the conversations once my team was out. I've been so sad about it and the Urban Meyer stuff going on. It's just like, I don't know. I think Alabama is going to – I'm going to go with Alabama on this one. And I'm
You don't want to see Alabama get pounded?
I do, but I like to keep it in the SEC. You know, they beat Florida. So if they go on to win it, you feel a little bit better about yourself, right?
Conference love is very overrated.
Is it overrated? Yeah, you're right. I probably should just root against Alabama. It'll be very hard to root for them, so I don't really know what I'm going to do tomorrow night. It'll be a game-time decision.
Hey, John, what about the three-quarter court basketball shot that Florida hit to win the game a couple days ago? Did you see that?
Oh, yeah, I did see that.
Unbelievable.
I saw that on the highlights.
That was good stuff. I think it's going to send him on a good season this year, so we'll see.
Well, you know Billy Donovan's my boy, right?
Is he your boy?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. He's a Providence grad, and, you know, I know him pretty well.
That's right.
So,
oh, yeah. Well, cool. Billy Donovan seems – I've never met him, but I hear he's a great guy.
He is a good guy.
Good to
Very
know.
Very good coach, absolutely.
So is Jim Boeheim.
Yeah,
get out of
okay,
here with
Jason,
your orange.
Yeah, throw the Syracuse thing in there like anybody cares.
I did good.
Like anybody cares. All right, Christina, Shop Talk's coming up next. Great to see you. We'll come find you this weekend.
All right, sounds good. See you soon.
You got it. Christina Acker, Shop Talk's coming up next. Going to wrap up this edition of Patriots Playbook. We're back at the Playbook, same patch time, same patch channel tomorrow. Maybe a little smack talk from Ravens Radio coming up in tomorrow in the Playbook. So get your email fingers loose and limber. And, of course, Russell Baxter scheduled to join us tomorrow inside our playoff edition of Patriots Playbook.